174. I'm near Oneida, Kentucky, heading down toward the Nars, toward Boonville, on the south fork of the Kentucky River. About 1:30 in the day, gorgeous day. This, I guess, is the 10th of October, 1974, and I want to interview an old man down here at Teges, T-E-G-E-S, Teges, Kentucky. I'm sitting on the front porch of a house here by the Nars, a home of Mr. Robertson, who is a descendant of old Adoniram Allen, and he says that the grist mill mentioned in the will of Adoniram Allen was in the Nars in the south fork of the Kentucky River by Teges. And Teges apparently got its name because Adoniram Allen was known as Tedious. River Jim was Jason's, Allen's brother, James. Frank Allen, son of Daniel, Jason's brother, had the grist mill when he was young. This is Rachel Allen of Ohio Tomb of this. We would walk 2 miles to see the timbers go down in rafts over the Cascades. Timber was run in rafts of wood put together with long, roughly split hickory limbs and wooden pins to hold the logs. Holes were bored with augers. The scenery is rusty. The river was narrow at this point and high cliffy solid rock walls. Water came real swift in big waves. The mill was just below at the foot of the Cascades. The big wooden wheel was turned to water. There was vibration every time the wooden little wheel stopped. The ladder turned the rocket round the corner. They would take a toll so much out of a bushel. Many times big fish would get in to stop the mill. The dam was built to run water in when it got low. And I told you in my other letter that my grandpa Garrett Wilson went to live with someone else after his mother Nancy Allen Wilson married again to Silas Gregg. And I learned recently that the place where they lived, they had a mill. So I got the story about the Adoniram Allen having a mill. It made me think this was a place for sure. If it describes the old Adoniram farm where you live, I'm as tickled as I can be. This is from a woman in Texas. And so forth.
On the Allen side we are.
You're kin to the Isons?
Yeah.
Which Isons are you related to?
Well, they was a Jim and a John that used to be in this country way back.
Are you kin to Gid Ison over in Letcher County?
I don't know.
Tell me something about the Nars here. You tell me, just tell me something about it here. What in the world is the Nars? And tell me about the rafting down there.
Rafting.
Yeah.
You mean what we used to do?
Yeah.
Well, we rafted here, and the river got, I guess it was about from the stage the water is now, about a 6 foot rise, we run them out of here.
Yeah.
And
when did you make your rafts up? In the winter?
Well, we started rafting about the 1st of February, and there's danger of ice tides being over. And all up till, we run them till July. And
there used to be a lot of them go out of here, didn't
there? Yeah. There's all kinds of them.
Now the Kentucky River the South Fork starts right up here above you, doesn't it?
The bridge up here.
At
where the river comes in,
yeah.
There, Goose Creek and Redbird.
Yeah. They run together there.
Mm-hmm. I've got a map here.
Does Bullskin run into Redbird?
No, Bullskin runs in just below where it falls.
But just below where the two form the river.
Mm-hmm.
Bullskin runs into the river just across that bridge.
Yeah.
There. Yeah. Used to be a lot of big timber in here, this country?
Yeah, there's all kinds of timber in here. Used to be.
Well, now, did the government at one time blast part of the Narrows out of here to open it up? It was dangerous, was it?
Yeah, that's about 18 and I've got the date down here when they was summer. I don't know whether they'll find it or not. But when they worked here, they shot off a lot of the Paddy's Rock down here.
They shot part of it off.
About 60 feet.
Yeah.
And then they built what we call a new chute up here at between here and Old Eden.
How'd they do that?
They cut a chute on the left side of the river. You come down and so the rafts come straight, not running under a cliff.
Yeah.
We come around there, you couldn't go under that. There's a big sticking out cliff there, I guess 60 feet sticks out that you had to go under if you went on down. They had a few rays went that way, but you just had to, if there's much of a tide, you just had to lay down on them to get under.
Like to get killed, huh?
Yeah.
That would have been kind of scary. You lived on a raft pretty much, didn't you, going down?
Yeah, you stayed on a raft.
Yeah.
I never did make but one trip past Heidelberg down here. I made one trip out to what we call Old Landing down yonder.
Yeah, I know where that is.
I made one trip when I was 14 years old down there.
But you rafted a lot otherwise? You went up down on a lot of other rafts?
Yeah. I went down on them from my time I was 14 years old. I'd make sometimes as high as 8 or 10 trips during the rafting season. We went started rafting about the 1st of March. We'd log all fall and winter up till then. And
was it pretty dangerous?
You mean the raft?
Yeah.
Well, it looked dangerous, but there never did many people. I never noticed, but two ever getting drowned in the Nars down here, or about the Nars.
Yeah.
One right at the basin down there got drowned, and one fella got drowned down here right in below the Nars. He went on down to what we call Hyten's Dam down above Aldridge Rock.
Above where?
Aldridge's Rock.
Where's Aldridge's Rock?
It's on down the river about 4 miles
yeah.
down here.
There's a pool above that rock?
Huh?
There's a pool above that rock?
Well, there's not too much of a small stretch of water. And then the boat landing, what we call the boat landing, is in above it. And the basin between here.
Did rafts break up ever?
Yeah, they broke pretty bad sometimes on a bad tide or something. Or where they'd have to lay over a right smart bit before they'd run after this raft.
Yeah. Did they sink quite a few of them?
Well, no, they didn't. Any of them ever sink. They had them floated up, you know.
Yeah. What was the worst job on it? The man on the sweep?
Well, the man on the, they had, usually took about 4 or 5 men on the front end of them. It's called a bow, and then back end was called the stern. They usually about 2 men on here.
Well, what the men on the front did? What was their job?
They pull, use the oar, big oar to keep them from bowing and keep them in the right place.
You had an oar at front and back?
Yeah, you had that.
Yeah. Those are monstrous big things, weren't they?
Yeah, they
hewed them out.
Yeah, hewed them. Just 36 feet long. The shortest ones was 40 feet long, the longest.
How'd they have those fastened onto the raft?
Well, they took what we call knee poles and head blocks, and then a tickle pin, they called it, that went down through the head block into the front log, and a hole through the oar, and the oar just sit down on that.
Yeah. A tickle pin, huh?
Yeah. A tickle pin, they called it. Make it out of a dogwood or sarvis or something just about the right size. You go into the woods and cut them 7/4 or 8/4 sometime. You go and cut your tickle pins out of the woods.
Why'd they call it tickle pin, I wonder?
Well, that's something it just because I guess it's in the center of the raft and the oar played on it.
Yeah.
It, where you work back and forth, it worked as a...
What other peculiar names did rafts have?
Well, we had one we called a snake raft. What was called a snake raft was where the whole trees was cut and rafted lengthways up and down the river.
Lengthways?
Yeah, the whole
tree. Were they fastened together?
Yeah, pinned together just about, they make them about 14 or 16 feet wide. just a whole tree.
And fasten them together end to end?
They pin them together crossways.
Yeah. Huh.
They was harder to handle than the other.
How long would you make those? Just the length of one log?
No, they'd make about 4 or 5 trees.
In length?
It'd be about 80 or 90 feet long.
And then they were pivoted so they could follow one another?
Yeah.
That's the reason called a snake, huh?
Snake ray. It's hard to handle. You got to point them.
Did the river ever get too big for you to raft?
Yeah, they call it 8 and 10 foot over a log tide. The river would get real full.
You wanted 6, 8 feet to get out, huh?
You'd want about ordinary tide. It took about a 4 foot raise, but the way the river is now, it'd take about 6.
Yeah.
River's all low.
The river's lower now than it was then?
Yeah. I mean, it's lower than it would be in rafting season.
Yeah.
And it took about a 6 or more foot raise for a salt boat during that time.
For a what?
For a salt boat. They used to run salt boats.
Oh, a salt boat. Oh, now they made salt up above Manchester.
Yeah, and up here, right across. Across Moniki over there, they made salt.
Was this a wooden boat?
Yeah.
Did they bring it up the river or just make them and send them down and get rid of the boat?
Now, they made the boat. Some of them, great grandfather, they sold the gunnels right down here at this old Nowers Mill. And they'd make the boats down there in what we call the basin, the deep hole of water.
Mm-hmm.
Make them bottom up. They'd pile sand on the side out in the river and hook yokes of steers to them on the other side, turn them over when they got them built.
Hmm.
They'd take them boats up through these shoals in the river with cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Pull them up with.
Boy, that was work, wasn't it? You mean they'd pull it up one, then pull it up through the deep water and then take another yoke a cab and pull it through again?
Get up above and pull them through these shoals.
That was work.
And that's the way I've been told now. But
were cattle good working animals?
Yeah, they was good.
How'd they compare to the mule?
Well, a mule was faster and but you couldn't hardly beat a steer in the mud or in the woods.
Did you work steers?
Huh?
You worked steers?
Yeah, I worked steers.
Were they hard to break?
No, they weren't too bad.
Well, looks to me like the way they pull, all the weight was just right on their neck.
It's on that back again their shoulders, yeah. I broke cattle.
Could they pull as much as a mule?
Yeah, yoker cattle put as much as 2 pair of mules ordinarily.
Hmm.
A good big yoker cattle. Over slow, but
they were worth a lot of money, huh?
Yeah.
A lot of the logging then was done too
with cattle. Back in the early days, most of it was done with cattle.
Yeah.
And the wagon out of these creeks and places was mules mostly.
How big were the logs when they come in here? Do you have any idea, Mr. Roberts?
You mean when they first started logging in here?
Yeah.
They claimed a 6 foot saw would just. So, and I've been told there's a tree cut right in this holler here. They're so big they couldn't haul it out, they rolled it out.
Mm-hmm.
White oak.
But 6 foot was pretty common.
Yeah. Now, Frank Allen, a boy is raised here. I've heard my dad say that he'd seen him up here, walk up to ends of poplar logs.
Yeah.
He's 6 foot and 2 or 3 inches tall. Said them, it'd just be almost level with the top.
Was the walnut that big too?
Yeah, some of them.
Now, did they raft all that kind of stuff out of here, those big logs?
Yeah, they rafted them. Of course, now that took a bigger tide than just ordinary timber.
Yeah.
Yeah, they rafted that stuff over.
Was there a lot of deer and elk and stuff when they first come in here, bear?
Claimed it was. All that's been told is all kinds of deer, bear, wolves.
And I imagine the river was full of big fish, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was gnarled, too, and put most of it. That's the reason the government widened it and straightened it the best it could. Down here at the rock, it shot off about 60 feet.
Well, now, your grandfather then was one of the first men in here, wasn't he?
My great-grandfather. I'm the seventh generation.
Robertson, right?
Robertson, yes.
Yeah.
But my grandfather Robertson married a Allen.
Married one of the Allens, yeah.
I've got three or four grandfathers. Mm-hmm. Allen down there married.
Well, I guess this was originally log cabins in here, wasn't it?
There
were originally log cabins in here, weren't they?
Yeah. See, the old man, Eddie Norm Allen, his first house was built right over here. He built a two-pin log building. He had, the first school teachers they had in here, he'd hire them and let the other children come to the mm-hmm. school. Mm-hmm. Had an upstairs room in the building that he let them have school.
Were there Indians in here when he came in?
Well, there was a few of them, I think they claimed. But they was kindly getting civilized.
This country was kind of bad country for a while, wasn't it?
It's rough. Must have been.
Used to be a lot of feuding up in this part.
Yeah. Now my great-grandfather Albner married an Indian girl.
He did? From here?
Yeah, back this Buffalo country back here.
Tell me about him. Now, Albner was, according to Fred Gabbard Boonville, Abner was the first man who settled. His last name was Abner. He settled the mouth of Buffalo.
That was my great-great-great-grandfather.
Well, tell me something about him.
Well, he settled over there, and when they got in that feud, and he had a feud in that country, you know, way back. They got to come in there. He left out of there and come over to Newfound over here. And from there, he went into Burning Springs over here, there in Jackson County.
Who were the Abner students with over on Buffalo then?
He wasn't a feudin'.
Oh.
The Abners was.
The Gabbards?
Gabbards and
Bakers.
Bakers and first one thing and another.
Yeah.
He just got out and amongst them.
Well, now there's an Abner Baker I've known all my life over there. The first two people over there were Abner and Baker, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, the way I heard it, there were three Indian families living at the mouth of Buffalo, and they killed them all.
Now, my great-great-great-grandmother was supposed to have been an Indian.
What tribe? Do you have any idea?
Cherokee.
Cherokee?
That's what I've been told.
They were living on Buffalo?
They lived on the Pea Ridge.
On the Pea Ridge in Buffalo.
In Buffalo.
Yeah.
That's what I've been told, but and then not.
What was Mr. Abner's first name?
Buxton.
Buxton Abner.
Yes.
Do you have any idea what year he was over there and moved in there?
It's 17 or something. I haven't got much record on the Abner's.
That was the first...
He come in here from the Revolution War.
Yeah.
He's out of Virginia.
Yeah.
The Abners come out of Virginia. Him and his brother, Sam, I believe was his brother's name. But I think Sam, during the war, he got killed on the head of Goose Creek or something back in here. But they come in here together.
He got killed by whom? By guerrillas or somebody?
Yeah. The Abners, the late generation of Indians, pardon me.
Well, I'll be darned. Well, that's all right. I didn't know that. Now, I'd only known that And that must have been, it must have been two of the very earliest settlers in this part of Kentucky.
Well, the Abners was. The Robertsons was up here.
And the Allens.
And the Allens and yeah. the Joneses and the Bakers.
Yeah.
See, the Allens brought the Bakers into this country.
Well, now the Bakers were in a lot of feuding up here in Clay County, weren't they?
Yeah, that is kind of offspring of the of some of them, but this generation of Bakers, I mean the ones that come in here with my Allen generation of people, I never heard much out of them.
But John Baker and, let's see, you know...
That is Wild, John Wild and them boys, they was kind of old.
Yeah. Hell, there's been a lot of people killed in this county,
yeah,
haven't there?
Yeah, they done a lot of killing. Now, the, you see, the old man Dan Baker, he married, Jeff Baker. He married old T.J.'s Annie Narmalin's daughter.
Yeah. You don't know why the Gabbards were feuding over there on Buffalo, do you? You have any idea why they were feuding around?
Well, they just got in over elections or over the property some way or another, the land and so on, I think so.
Bullskin and Redbird used to be pretty tough country too, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of Bullskin belonged to old Antigas had in Armadillo at one time.
He did.
He deeded that to the girl that married old Combs. Old Murdy.
Murdy Combs?
Murdy Combs.
Did you ever know of Napoleon Bonaparte Combs, old man Boney Combs?
Boney. No.
That was my great great grandfather. Where'd Bullskin get his name? Do you have any idea?
Well, I heard that some feller stole, I believe it was old man Combs or some of them old fellers, stole their little skin it up there about the porch of Bullskin. Yeah. I heard that. Of course, they could be something else. I don't know.
Well, there weren't many roads in here when you were a boy then. What year were you born, Mr. Allen?
I was born in 1906.
1906.
Yeah, they wasn't no roads at all. They only used their wagon roads, you know.
Yeah.
It's high. Number 11 wasn't out
yeah.
here.
You used to, if you wanted to go to Manchester or Boonville anywhere, you had to...
Rode a mule.
You had to ride in. Yeah.
Or drive a wagon. It used to be pretty rough. Back in my early days, and we took a mule or horse for most all of our transportation.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that kind of rough, but I guess pretty good time.
Back before you fertilized, how much corn did you make an acre on these bottoms?
Well, on these bottoms here.
Yeah, and how much do you make now with fertilizer?
Well, back. I was, say, 46 years ago, I farmed these bottoms here with my Uncle Willie Allen. I done the plowing, him the hoeing, and he went, hey, we got about 20 bushels of acre.
What do you make today?
About 130.
Now, that old corn then was called Flint corn or something, wasn't it?
Well, they called it old blue and white speckled, and Boone
yeah.
County white, and Johnson County white.
Yeah. But now you're raising the hybrids.
Hybrid. I'm growing the 82 funks this year.
And doing a hell of a lot less work, aren't you?
Doing no work.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got 10 acres here. In this year now.
You make 1,000 bushels on that, yeah.
It'll make over 1,000. I had three rows gathered around around it, and three rows one way will make a pickup truck 30 bushel load.
That's all right. That's pretty darn good.
Now that's the outside row.
Yeah.
Of course, it made me a little better. But I'm satisfied with it that way.
Well, people lived pretty well in this country then, didn't they?
Yeah, they lived good. They had plenty of hog meat and corn and beef if they wanted.
Yeah.
About anything you wanted to.
I see you raise bees.
Well, yeah, I've got bees. Most of them belongs to some Gay boys in the head of Buffalo. You know them?
I don't know. I know a lot of
John
Gays,
Gay.
But
runs that big mill.
John Gay, yeah.
Runs that big mill back there, him and his boy.
Yeah.
You know, them and my wife related. They wanted a bee lot over here.
You ever seen a big fish in the river here?
Yeah.
How big have you seen come out of here?
Oh, about 4 foot.
What were they? Catfish?
Catfish. And salmon. I've seen salmon before we did.
What kind of salmon was it?
It's just one of these old potted salmon. Original native of this part, I guess.
What would a 4 foot catfish weigh?
It weighs some over 100 pounds,
yeah.
Again. You got one in the old mill down here once. Its mouth would stretch over an 8-inch railroad tie.
Oh, that's something, isn't it?
They made two wash tubs full, cut up. That was my grandfather running the mill at that time. Got that fish out and cleaned it and just invited the neighbors all in.
Oh, that's something.
They said there's 100 or so people eat out of it and plenty of fish left.
Well, I've never seen one of these salmon. I guess the pollution's killed them all out. You ever have sturgeon in this river? Do you remember sturgeon?
Sturgeon?
Hmm? Yeah.
No, I don't remember the fish of that name.
Any fish in it now?
Well, there's some. I wouldn't know how many. I ain't fished none for every year. They catch them pretty good most of the time around. But boy, went through here a while ago, I guess, going to fish. On a motorcycle.
Yeah, I saw that motorcycle park.
I guess he is a reeling down there someplace.
I parked down there. Well, it's 2:30.
Well.
That was a conversation I had with a Mr. John Robertson, who lives at the old Allen home place at Teges, T-E-G-E-S, Teges, Kentucky, the lower edge of Clay County, near the Narras, N-A-R-R-E-R-S, or the Narras of the south fork of the Kentucky River. And you boys will recall that we found those millstones laying in the bottom of the river there from the old mill run by old man Coondog Bill Allen. Now, according to Uncle Tom Myers, Coondog Bill Allen was married to one of Grandpa Myers' sisters, as I recall. I'm going to have to check that out, but I've not been able to verify this yet. But there is a family tie here. Now, it was interesting that Fred Gabbard had told me that Abner and Baker were the two early families which settled at the mouth of Upper Buffalo. I do hope he writes his paper on Owsley County. I'm anxious to read it, but that they killed the three Indian families that were living there. Now, this makes a little bit different story. This man says that Mr. Abner was his great-great-great-great-grandfather. It's also interesting today that at the end of the Chestnut Flats Road, outside of McKee, I ran into an old gentleman who had retired from Ohio. He said he'd raised his family in Franklin, Ohio, and moved back here in 59, bought a farm right at the end of the road, whose name is Abner, who said that he had uncles and aunts and relatives in Owsley County in this end of Clay. So obviously these people are some of the same people. I stopped by to see Kelly Morgan, who had written the books on the early families of Clay County, and I found that he has moved to Florida. I was lucky enough to stop and ask some kid about it, if he knew where he lived, and he said, I got a postcard from him yesterday, so I dropped back to his house and he gave me his address in Florida. I want to write him a couple of notes. I'm heading now toward Pine Creek. I'm going to visit Uncle Tom's and Aunt May's farm, look around, see what's going on there, and who knows what after that. Well, it's long about dark. I did go by Uncle Tom's and Aunt May's old place. The window had been broken out of the back kitchen door. However, all the doors were closed and locked. It did not appear that anyone had been in the house recently. Therefore, I made no effort to go in. Sort of a lonesome looking place without them there. The ropes were gone, the buckets from the wells and so forth. And I rambled around the place a little bit and picked up three little old brown bottles out of the shed there. They had told me to take anything at the house that I could see loose that I wanted. I backed my truck up to one of his walnut trees and threw in a large number of walnuts and headed back toward McKee. I stopped at Rayhoff to or Tyner rather, to fill with gasoline. I asked this fellow where I might get some firewood. He said, well, right on top of the hill. So I drove up on top of a little hill there, and there's a stave mill where they're taking their 4 foot long scrap and bundling it into 1500 pound bundles, and they'll load them in your truck for $2, and hell, you can't beat that. So I put one bundle on. Now I'll have to saw right down through the middle of it and end up with starting wood for the fireplace at home. And then I stopped at McKee to see Mrs. Henry Hughes, the old Dr. Hughes' widow, Isla Campbell, who grew up with Mother and Uncle Tom and knew all their family quite well. She's from Owsley County. And I guess Isla's well up in her 80s. She looks real, real good. Her daughter, oldest daughter, Louise, who married Ed Hayes, a lawyer, now lives on the Winchester Road at Lexington. And Marie, who was slightly behind me in school, 1 year, I guess, who married a fellow I was in college with, is still in Horse Cave, has three daughters. And her son, Henry Jr., retired about 5 years ago from the Air Force. He was a pilot for 25 or 20 years or whatever, and lives in Panama City, Florida. Isla wanted to know all about Uncle Tom and Aunt May, and I gave her their address at New Trenton, Indiana. And I decided, hell, while I'm this close, the only way I'm ever going to get anything on the Stewart portion of the family is to find somebody who has it. And a Mrs. Wood out on the Kirksville Road at the old Gus Stewart place, the daughter of old man Gus Stewart, apparently has a lot of this information. Now, Gus Stewart was a relative of Mother's. When I was a little boy there at Richmond, early teenager, I guess, and younger, we would visit Uncle Gus Stewart's place. He was 90-some-odd years old, had his teeth mounted and saddled and bridled and mounted his horse and rode over his property every day, lived in a beautiful, huge old colonial house. And apparently his daughter, Ms. Wood, still lives at this property. So after I left Mount Vernon, or correction, after I left McKee, I came across to Berea, to Big Hill, rather, and then over to Berea, and I'm now across Highway 21 to intersect Lancaster Pike, north of Paint Lick. And when I hit the Kirksville Road, I'm going to find the Gus Stewart place. And if Ms. Wood will see me at this time of night, breaking, or just about dark, I'm going to go in and get a little of some information at least, and have a smattering of ignorance about the Stewart part of her family. Mother was always high on the Stewart, so I'd like to find out something. At McKee, I stopped at the telephone and called Nell and asked her if there's a chance that she and Martha Anderson might meet me tomorrow at Keenan Racetrack, in which case I would spend the night with the Eversoles and meet them. But she reminded me that in the morning is the Jewish women's book sale at Cincinnati, and there's a great chance to find some real good books at this. It's out at the Kenwood Shopping Center. So I've decided to go in after detouring by to see Mrs. Wood. This has been a wonderful day. I have thoroughly enjoyed seeing these people. I've gotten a little bit of oral history down. It's interesting that this next month, the Northern Kentucky State College will initiate an oral history section in the charge of the head of the history department. I've forgotten his name. I believe it's Dr. Lutz. Isetta Steele, who met me at the airport while waiting for Nell last week, told me about this, and I told her that I was doing some of this, and apparently she told her husband, Frank Steele, the president of the university, who came over and told me about this, and he wants this gentleman to meet with me. Now, Stuart has been copying some of my tapes. I am now carefully taking the tabs out of the back of all the tapes I make because they cost too little to take the chance of erasing. We have had some unfortunate experiences of erasures. So now when I complete a tape, I am taking the tabs off. Then if anyone after hearing them wants to reuse them, they can cover these little areas with cellophane and reuse them. I'm traveling across Highway 21, which has been a greatly improved highway since I was over at 25 years ago, I guess. This too is beautiful country. It's open farm country. Now, a lot of this country is shaley country around Berea, and not the greatest agricultural country. It lays beautifully. It's fine grazing country, and has reasonable agriculture, but not the absolute best. We moved to Berea in 1924-25 as a family. When my oldest brother, Leslie, finished finished grades at Boonville, Kentucky, Dad had an absolute mania to get the children an education. So he sent Leslie to Berea to board at the academy. And this was a fairly expensive item to expect to do for seven children. So after that 1 year there, 4 years, I've forgotten which it was, four I guess, Dad bought a house at Berea down at 43 Prospect Street. It was about a block and a half toward the Berea Mountains from Boone Tavern. And a real nice piece of property where we lived and where I entered with Marvin entered the kindergarten at the Union Church. Following that, we finished four grades at the Berea Training School, Knapp Hall. It got so that the college did not want local students in. They wanted mainly people who boarded and from Appalachia, which of course we were from. So in 1930, Dad built a house at Richmond. We moved to Richmond, where we entered the training school at Eastern, and where I finished college in 1941. We liked Berea very much. It was a great school. Leslie finished his pre-med here, went on to Vanderbilt and made honors there. Martha graduated here as Martha, or rather did several years of college work here as Martha Garrett. Many, many years later, 20 years later or so, she called for her credits and was furious with the college. They couldn't find any record of Martha ever so. And she finally recalled that she had been single, was Martha Garrett. And Norma went to the Berea High School instead of the academy, Fruit Jar High, they called it. The principal's there, a principal and someone got in a brawl and one broke a fruit jar over the other's head. So it was forever after known as Fruit Jar High. Now, when we lived at Berea and went to school there, there was absolutely no smoking by the students. It meant instant firing. There was no radio. There was no going into a restaurant. There was no going to a movie. Any of these events were fireable. The girls wore middies and bloomer, cotton. No silk nor rayon was allowed. There was no nylon at that time. No makeup was allowed on the theory that some with money might make others feel inferior. We had class on Saturday. We were out on Monday. It's interesting that Cowbell Hollow was the Berea Lake that furnished all the water to the entire city. that the current electrical current was furnished by the generator at the college. Every afternoon at something like 5:45, there would be a minute blackout while they switched from the small daytime generator to the larger night generator. The college also ran the fire department, and had a fire truck which would never run, had to be pushed to the scene of fires periodically by students. Boone Tavern was a place of great note. All the notables met there. And when I was a little boy, I can remember seeing two old men in rocking chairs on the front porch of the Boone Tavern with shawls and hats on, long white hair. And these were Thomas Alva Edison and Henry Ford, who met there frequently. And the college had no buildings at that time except one small prefab building they had bought from Sears Roebuck. Made from their own money. Otherwise, all the buildings were donated. An interesting facet is that Henry Ford would never donate money to Berea for a building because they taught history, and he was against the teaching of history, and yet probably nobody has done more for the preservation of history than Henry Ford has through Deerfield Village. And he had an absolute mania for anything that Edison did, and I think this was great. He preserved everything relating to Edison, but he would never make a donation. It is said that a cousin of ours, Ed Ray and Rhoda Ray, whose wife and he used to come and visit us in a wagon, and who lived north of Berea, were making molasses one day. That a black Ford automobile stopped, that a gentleman got out of the car, walked over to where the stir off was taking place, ate a little of the molasses and said, "I'd like to have some." Ed Ray said, "Go over to the house and tell Rhoda to give you a jar." The gentleman did. He filled it. The gentleman said, "How much?" And Ed said, "Oh, nothing at all. You're more than welcome." And the fellow said, "If you could have one thing, what would you like?" And he said, "I'd like one of them black Ford automobiles, just like you're driving." About 2 weeks later, a Ford automobile showed up on a flat car at Berea for delivery to Ed Ray. This had been Henry Ford. And Ed had a new car. We had a fair number of relatives at Berea, Flannery's and so forth, and the Clark family. Uncle Sam Clark, who married Dad's aunt, Mattie Clark, lived there. His son, Mark, lived there, worked at the college. Uncle Sam is credited with having made more looms than any other known man in the history of the world. And this is written up in some book I've read. I cannot remember which. Maybe it's in the book written by Raines from Berea called The Land of Saddlebags. But it's a very fascinating town, anyhow. He had a pistol which some of his family killed Dad's great uncle Putnam Garrett with. And Dad used to get furious when he'd see that gun. Uncle Sam would show it to him occasionally. And Uncle Sam was a very benign man. I don't know why he would do this. Well, this is some little while later. It's dark. I have been around one way into Kurtzville, out another. It's so dark I cannot recognize landmarks. It's been since 1936 or 7 since I was out here. So I do not identify, I cannot find the Stewart property. And the younger people whom I ask know nothing about it. So I'm going to have to wait till a later date. I want to call Norma and have her get a hold of Ms. Stewart, because she's getting pretty old herself, and get this data as quickly as possible.